If you have a Bible, we are going to be in the Gospel of Mark, chapter 4, verse 35. You guys see that commercial where the referees are discussing something and the mic's on?
Yeah.
The mic's on. Like, act like you're doing something. Anyways, I just went to the restroom with the mic on. I was like, I hope you muted the mic. That would be bad. Anyways, I tried to be serious for a moment there. So I'm going to show you a little video clip here. And this is a sometimes pride and overconfidence can really be a bad thing. And let's just check this out. You'll see what I'm talking about.
Where is the poison? The battle of wits has begun. It ends when you decide and we both drink and find out who is right and who is dead.
But it's so simple. All I have to do is divine from what I know of you. Are you the sort of man who would put the poison into his own goblet or his enemies? Now, a clever man would put the poison into his own goblet because he would know that only a great fool would reach for what he was given. I'm not a great fool, so I can clearly not choose the wine in front of you. But you must have known I was not a great fool. You would have counted on it, so I can clearly not choose the wine in front of me.
Truly, you have a dizzying intellect.
Wait till I get going! Where was I?
You're trying to trick me into giving away something. It won't work.
It has worked! You've given everything away! I know where the poison is!
Then make your choice.
I will, and I choose... What in the world can that be?
What? Where? I don't see anything.
Oh, well, I could have sworn I saw something. No matter.
What's so funny?
I'll tell you in a minute. First, let's drink. Me from my glass and you from yours.
Guessed wrong.
You only think I guessed wrong. That's what's so funny. I switched glasses when your back was turned. Ha ha, you fool. You fell victim to one of the classic blunders. The most famous is never get involved in a land war in Asia. But only slightly less well known is this. Never go in against a Sicilian when death is on the line.
Oh. The classic Princess Bride. Sometimes when we think we have it all figured out, we don't, do we? We're going to take a look at a story here in the Bible. This is a true story that happened to the disciples and Jesus. And go ahead and put that up. I have it up here if you want to look at it up here. If you have your Bible, you can open up as well. I'm reading now the NIV this morning. Let's go ahead and take a look at this story here. The disciples were in a boat teaching from the Sea of Galilee. And Jesus says, let's pick up in verse 35 here. Okay, that day when evening came, he said to his disciples, "Let us go to the other side." Leaving the crowd behind, they took him along, just as he was in the boat. There was also other boats with him. A furious squall came up, and the waves broke over the boat, so that it was nearly swamped. Jesus was in the stern sleeping on a cushion. The disciples woke him and said to him, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" He got up, rebuked the wind, and said to the waves, "Quiet, be still." Then the wind died down, and it was completely calm. He said to his disciples, "Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?" They were terrified and asked each other, "Who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him." It's powerful. I've been camping out in this section of scripture because I can really draw a lot out of this little section here. And as we know, the Princess Bride was not a true story, but this is a true story that happened years ago, and we can pull things out of it to apply it to our own lives and look at it. And so I really dug into it, and I'm going to unpack some things for you here this morning that really touched me in this section. So at this point, we see that the disciples were probably feeling pretty confident about themselves because they've been hanging out with Jesus for a while. They've seen some pretty cool miracles, some healings. Jesus do some pretty cool stuff, and they were the chosen 12, the best of the best, you know, the VIPs, the Pro Bowlers, you know, the guys that made it to the top, you know. And so they're feeling pretty cool, you know. They're like, they're going with Jesus, you know. They're like this guy up here, like the Sicilian. He was very overconfident in himself and thought he had it all figured out. And the disciples were probably like that as well. We know. We back up in the verse 34. If we look at verse 34 back in our Bibles here, it says Jesus was teaching them. And when he was alone with them, he had to explain everything. So they just didn't get it. But luckily, Jesus was kind enough to, after he told many parables to the crowds, he would pull them aside and say, well, this is what it really means. And so they're probably trying to figure out, man, this guy's a farmer. What's the deal? He's always talking about planting seeds and farming and stuff, you know? He's always talking about farming. So, but that was very relative for their culture during that day. So he used parables of farming because the people could get it. But, you know, they were trying to figure out, why is he always talking about planting seeds and, you know, gardening and stuff? So he must like flowers and corn. So that's good. So these guys, they had a hard time, and which is, you know, understandable because they're human. And so, so they get in the boat. Jesus is exhausted at this point because he'd been teaching all day long. And the crowds are just harassing him, you know, all following him over. So they get in the boat and decide to go to the other side. He says, let's go to the other side. And then Jesus finds a cushion, which is very common back in the day to have a cushion in the boat, in the stern. And he climbs in the stern and lays down and takes a nap. There's only, I believe it was only two times in the Bible it talks about Jesus sleeping or napping, which is kind of interesting. I think it was twice, I heard somebody say, which is pretty crazy. You'd think he'd need more sleep than that because he was human. Meanwhile, as they set sail, they know the sun was going down. And they know that the Sea of Galilee was a pretty crazy place to be in the evenings, and that's when most of the storms would come upon the Sea of Galilee. And so the disciples probably knew that they were probably gonna go out into some treacherous waters beforehand. But they went anyways because they probably wanted to prove to themselves and to Jesus how cool they were and how confident they were in themselves, because some of these guys were experienced, you know, sailors and fishermen who've been on the sea before. And so they probably were like, let's just prove to Jesus how awesome we really are. We know we're going to a storm. He probably doesn't know that we're going into a storm. So we're going to like prove that we can get through this thing. This is all just my mind thinking here. Maybe some of that stuff happened. Maybe it didn't. But it's good to know. But we do know this happened. This took place. So the Sea of Galilee. This takes place. So the Sea of Galilee, talked about that. It is the largest freshwater lake in Israel, and it is approximately 33 miles in circumference, 13 miles long, and 8.1 miles wide. The lake has a total area of 64.4 square miles at its fullest, and maximum depth is approximately 141 feet. At levels between 705 feet and 686 feet below sea level. It is the lowest freshwater lake on Earth and the second lowest lake overall after the Dead Sea. The lake is fed partly by underground springs, although its main source is a Jordan River, which flows through it from the north into the south. So this was actually just, they call it the Sea of Galilee, but it was a very large lake, very deep lake. And it was actually the shape of a harp, or maybe a kidney bean, but they like to say harp. And so it's a pretty cool. I actually Googled a bunch of stuff and was looking online about it. Now, at this time that we know the sun was going down because it was evening, and it became dark. And so they're out there on this lake in the dark, and it says suddenly a furious squall came up. In other translations, it says a furious storm, and the waves broke over the boat, so that it was nearly swamped. So at this point, they're in the boat, The storm's come, and the water's splashing. It's coming into the boat. It's submerging the boat. They're getting soaking wet. A squall actually means a sudden, violent gust of wind or a localized storm. And other definitions, it talks about a whirlwind or almost comparison to a small hurricane. So they're pretty hardcore storms. They're not just a little gust of wind that blows and knocks a couple trees over. There were serious storms that happen. There was like that windstorm that we had a while ago. That was pretty crazy. When you drive around town, you see these trees laying over, and it's like, holy smokes, that was some serious damage, you know? And the interesting thing about that is when winds blow very hard and storms hit, it exposes the weak places, doesn't it? We got to see what trees were weak and which ones were strong when that wind blew. And so this is what we see going on in this situation as well. Like I said, it was really well known for this to happen on the Sea of Galilee. What happens is it's surrounded by mountains all around, and there's a big mountain, the Mount Hermon. I think it's 7,000 feet or I don't know, something like that. The cold air comes rushing down, the hot airs come up, and it causes this storm. And it's actually well known to this day. It still goes on because of the way the mountains are, and the cold air meets the hot air. So this is a very true event that is we know happened. It took place. So these guys were some of them were experienced fishermen. So you think that this time they would be, you know, like, okay, we got this. We can handle this. We've been through storms before. We can take this. You know, so they start doing their thing, you know, whatever they need to do. They start rowing, oaring, and all that stuff. And at the point, they get so overwhelmed that they don't even know what to do anymore. And they look over, and Jesus is sleeping in the stern. And so I can imagine this conversation takes place, you know, in the midst of chaos. And they're like, maybe we should wake the carpenter. And they're like, no, I don't want to wake him. You wake him. And it's funny because Jeff was talking about Peter, and Peter always gets the blame, but I'm going to blame this one on Peter as well. He's the one that probably went over and woke up Jesus. Jesus, wake up. Wake up. So while the storm was roaring and the disciples were oaring, Jesus was snoring. While the waves were crashing and everybody was laughing, Jesus was napping. Yeah, that's it. I go on want some more. Let's see. While the crowds were sleeping. No, wait, Jesus was sleeping. Okay, anyway, so where was I? Oh, yeah, waking up the carpenter. Wake him up. So they said, teacher, don't you care if we drowned? Verse 38. So at this point, he's trying to guilt trip Jesus. Don't you care? Don't you even care if we drown? Do you not care about us? And sometimes we say that to Jesus, don't we? When we're in the midst of something, we're like, where are you, God? I like, don't even care. Where are you in this situation? You know, don't you care if something bad happens to us? And at this point, they're fearing the storm and they're fearing death because they know if they go overboard, they're probably gonna drown. They're probably gonna die. So I brought a little prop. I like props, you know that. Let's see. When I go in a boat and I'm headed for a storm, I'm bringing one of these things. Right here. I'm going prepared. I know better. It's a Speedo. All right. You ready for the storm? Okay, so we're going in, guys. Are you taking pictures of me? Oh my goodness gracious. Please, don't have permission to post it. So, if their disciples were more prepared and they brought their life jackets along, they wouldn't be so nervous, would they? But they didn't have their life jackets on them. So what happened at this point? They didn't know this was going to happen, but they got to see something really cool happen now. In verse 39, it says, Jesus got up, he rebuked the wind and said to the waves, quiet, be still. Then the wind died down and it was completely calm. I forgot to show you my picture. So here's a picture of what it might have looked like on the storm. Of course, notice that none of them have life jackets on. They were not prepared to go into the storm. They thought they were. They got really confident about themselves, but they didn't wear their life jackets. So they got nervous. They woke up Jesus. Jesus stands up. He rebukes the wind. I wonder what that looks like. It just says he rebuked the wind. It didn't say what he said or how he did it. It just says he rebuked the wind, which is pretty cool. I wonder what that looked like to have Jesus rebuke the wind. Yeah. Quiet, be still. So these three words, and we know that instantly it was calm. And so they're sitting there going, I wasn't scared. I was not even scared at all. I was totally like, I was watching Peter over there, and he was scared, but not me. I wasn't scared. I can imagine, you know, it's like, look at me. I have my life jacket on. I'm definitely not scared. If I go into a boat and I'm going towards a storm, I am definitely going to bring something that's going to keep me from drowning, and it's going to be my life jacket. We see something powerful happen at this point, because we see Jesus is humanity. We see his human nature sleeping, but then we also see the deity of Christ. We see him fully God and fully man. We see him speak to the storm, to his nature, and it ceases. So we see something that the disciples probably didn't see before, maybe a little bit, but they saw a greater picture of this Jesus, this man who is the Son of God, who is God, the nature. And it was powerful, I can imagine, because instantly their fear had shifted. He says, in verse 40, he says to his disciples, why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith? Do you still have no faith? So he was testing them to see where their faith is. Like I said before, when the storms come, we'll be able to see where those weaknesses are. And we'll be able to see which trees are weaker than the others. I'm going to take this thing off because it's bugging me. Should I? Is it safe? Keep it on. Keep the jacket on. Take it off. Is it safe to take it off now? Is my faith get building stronger, or am I putting confidence in the life jacket? Putting confidence in myself that I'm going to be able to swim. Because time and time again, the disciples, they saw Jesus' miracles with their own eyes. But even after seeing all of his miracles, they still are not sure who Jesus was. They did not have faith that he was the Son of God. They did not have faith like a child. That's tough, because sometimes as much as we want to try to have enough faith to believe that Christ is going to be there for us in the midst of a hard time, we rely on our own means sometimes instead of relying on him. Our first response is often, I got this. I can take care of this. I can do this. But Jesus wants us to say, he wants to shake us a little bit and say, nah, you don't got this. Give it to me. I can take this. Jesus wanted faith from his disciples. He wasn't concerned who was the smartest or the strongest or the best sailor. Faith in him is all that mattered. Jesus probably allowed this storm so the disciples could see them for themselves that they did not yet have faith in him. The cool thing is, it's much better to go into the storm with Jesus than to avoid the storm. We know we're headed for a difficulty, and we'd rather just go, like we talk about, Jeff talks about all the time, we'd rather just go around it. But oftentimes Jesus says, no, we're going through it. And it's hard because we don't want to go through a hard situation, but it's better to be with Jesus in the storm than to go around the storm without him. And that's a really powerful word there. So that was a pretty wild ride that they went through, and pretty crazy. And I can imagine Jesus is like, he's like, you guys, you don't think you realize what you're going to see when we get to the other side? And if you know what happens when they get to their side, they encounter the demon-possessed man that's full of demons. And so, like, they're on their way to another thing. So they're in the midst of this storm, and he's like, chill out, guys. I'm just building your faith because what you're about to see is even greater than what you just saw here, you know? And you have to be prepared for what the next step is down the road. And that's how we go through in our own personal walk, is each time we go through something difficult or each time we go through some kind of situation in our life, it's a preparation for something that's coming in the future. I've heard somebody say, you're either going through a storm, you're in the midst of a storm, or you're in between storms. So I'm going to take this off. I'm getting hot. I'm going to put it right here. Anybody need it? Anybody need the life jacket? Yeah, so we're either going through a storm, or in the midst of a storm, or we're headed, or we're in between a storm. So there's always, and I was talking to Jeff about this the other day, and I was like, man, I don't know, but I think we're always in a storm. I don't think there's any, like, not, you know? And I'm, like, thinking in this, it's like, you know, you just want our lives to be so easy, and, you know, we're walking with Jesus. Why isn't this simple, you know? It's like, you know, when we focus on him, and our lives should be wonderful and easy and simple, and he's like, it's a process of, you know, walking with him and learning and growing, and it's, you know, laying things down and being uncomfortable, and, you know, our reward will come later on in life, but right now we have to be a servant and give everything. We looked at this, and we saw that there was fear. It says, why are you so afraid? Do you not have faith? They were terrified, and they asked each other, who is this that even the wind and the waves obey him? So what do we know about fear? Fear, not all fear is bad. Sometimes fear can be somewhat good. We know that our natural human response when there's danger is fear. Like when with fear of a poisonous snake or fear of a bear, it gives us its ability for us to detect danger so that we have fear of those things. And that's a good fear. That's a healthy fear. Fear of poisonous snakes is not bad. I don't like snakes. I don't like spiders and snakes. I used to be a DJ at Skate World, and I had the record player, and I used to actually play these little records, and I remember that song we used to play all the time. I don't like spiders and snakes. How's it go? But I know I love you, or something like that. But I know I love you. Anyways, sorry. It's an oldie. It was on a 45. Just made noises. You guys know what records are. Where was I? Oh, my goodness. Okay. Oh, yeah, fear. Okay. Oh, yeah, check this out. So I had a fear experience. Oh, I've had many of them, but actually I'll tell you this one. I thought about it because I was at work, and I, as you know, I drive the garbage truck, and I'm out in the county. I do, like, way out in the sticks, and I was way out in up on Oak Point, and I do that first thing in the morning, and so it's, like, really dark out there, and I'm, like, way out. I mean, it's like, at the end of the road. Like, there's nothing out there but, you know, just darkness. And so I do it out there, and so I have these garbage cans, right? And like, and so this one kept getting knocked over all the time, and I'm like, what is going on? So I'd have to get out, and I hate getting out in the dark out there in the middle of nowhere, and I'm picking up all this garbage, you know, because I know there's wild animals and dogs and things like that. So I did this for, like, I think 2 weeks in a row. It happened the third week, and I was doing it the third week, and the guy came out, the owner came out, and he started talking to me. He's like, yeah, I think there's a bear around here. So he tells me there's this bear, and he thinks it's getting into his trash, and I'm thinking, oh, great, and I have to get out and clean it up. And so that, like, imprinted that into my brain. And so every time I went to go get that guy's garbage can, and it was on the ground, I'm, like, out of the truck, like, you know, like, okay. So, like, but, it just, like, it tormented me. Like, literally, like, in the back of my head, I thought a bear was going to come out and try to eat me. And I'm, like, that is not a good way to die. My wife wouldn't be happy about that. But seriously, and it, like, and I never saw a bear. He probably never saw a bear, but in my mind, there was a bear that was gonna eat me. You know, and so it just grew into this massive fear, you know. I'm like I'm over it now, I'm okay. I can sleep at night. But really, I mean, it's just amazing how one little thought and an instant, and all of a sudden now you're just, like, tormented by that thought. And, you know, and the enemy will do that to you. And it's unfortunate how he will do that. He will come at you with many different things. We fear We fear being alone. We fear being rejected. We fear disease and sickness. What are those things we fear? What are some things we fear? What's that? Finances? Oh, yeah, that's a big one. What else do we fear? Or afraid of? Failure, definitely. Public speaking, getting in front of people. Microphone. Water, uncertainty. Water, we fear of going in the water. So anyway, so there's all these things that are we fear in life. And like I said, not all fears are bad, because it's good to be afraid of the water if you don't know how to swim. But there's a way to overcome that. You learn how to swim. So there's ways that we can overcome these fears, and God will give us the strength to do that. But I don't know why. I just got stuck on this section of scripture, and I just really dug into this fear stuff. And I've struggled with fear in my own life, and I don't like it. It's terrible. And so I really wanted to look at this. And so check this out. So fear can disarm fear. Let me explain. Fear of something greater will oftentimes disarm the fear of something lesser. So the disciples were in the boat, right? They were terrified. And then they said, "Who is this man?" So instantly, their fear of the storm, their fear of dying, their fear of what's going on around them changed from fear of this to fear of the man standing in the boat with them. And so now the fear, the greater fear of Jesus overcame the fear of the storm. And so oftentimes when there's a greater fear, it overpowers the lesser fear in our lives. And so we know that it's important to fear God. We know that in Proverbs 9:10 it says, "Fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom." Amen. And so this is something that they learned the hard way. They learned that it's more important to fear Christ than to fear our situation at the time. And that's something that we have to get a grasp in our own lives. We have to understand. Okay. So this is Max Lucado says this: "Fear is a default emotion, and it overtakes all other emotions. Fear is one of the only emotions that demands a decision. By nature, we are fearful people. We have to decide to have faith, and we have to choose to have hope." Is that Isaac? Good name. I like Isaac. "Fear can hamper our relationship with God. Fear corrodes our confidence in the goodness of God and makes us question his existence." Isn't that true? "Fear affects our relationships because it turns us into control freaks. We become mean people, and we think that if we can control fear in one part of our lives, we can control it in others." I shared this a while ago when we had a little evangelical get together. And this is something that God was working in my own heart. I'm reading this book, and it was talking about control and stuff, and I realized how much I struggle with that control issue. And one of my situations, I was driving, and I hit some ice, and I started sliding all over, and was thinking about how I hate driving in snow and ice. I just hate it. I hate it, hate it, hate it. Because typically, on a normal day, I have control of everything, of my environment. I have control of the truck. I have control of what I'm doing. I have control of, you know, I'm controlling everything. I'm in control. I'm in the driver's seat. But then when you hit conditions like icy or snow conditions, all of a sudden, your things are going to happen that you have no control over. And, like, ice is one of those. I mean, you turn your steering wheel this way, and nothing happens. You turn it this way, and nothing happens. Or you hit your brakes, and you're not stopping. You know, and it drives me crazy. And I felt like the Lord spoke to me and said, you know, something about control, and how the reason why I struggle so badly with that is because of control, and how I try to control my environment and control things that go on around me. And I get so overwhelmed and stressed out because when I don't have control, it stresses me out. And that's not good. So I've given that to God, and I've working through that. And it feels good. It feels good to know that I don't have control of the situation around me at all times, but I can control myself, and I can let God have control of the situation. So if I can control myself and how I react to the situation, I'm not going to change what goes on around me, but I can change how I react to a situation. And that's the most important thing. Is, you know, yeah. If you've ever been to my house in like 3:30 in the afternoon, it's pretty crazy. I have no control what's going on around my house. And I'm like, ah! But we make it and we get through it. And it's good. And God's grace and peace is on that. But if I feel like I have to have everything in order, which, you know, like I'm kind of like a neat freak like that. And it conflicts with the whole situation because God's like, just let me help you with this. Stop trying to control every area of your life and just give it to me, you know. So that's cool. That's a little thing that's going on in my heart. So God did not give us a spirit of fear. Danny Silk, he says this, fear and love have opposite agendas, the opposite strategies for achieving them. They cannot coexist in a person, relationship, or culture. So fear and love cannot coexist. We know that fear and love cannot be in the same room at the same time because it ain't going to work. God is very clear in that he says the spirit he has put in you is not the spirit of fear, but the spirit of love, power, and a sound mind. That's 2 Timothy 1:7. So we know that he gave us the spirit of power, love, and a sound mind. He did not give us fear. Somebody else gave us that. God gives you peace. God gives you love. God gives you a sound mind. He gives these things to you as a gift. He says you can receive these if you want them. He hands them out freely. It's your birthday every day, if you want it. There's a gift for you, waiting for you. Every day when you wake up, you can choose. Am I going to have love today, or am I going to have fear today? Am I going to have peace today, or am I going to have chaos today? You get to choose and make that choice. And the disciples got to be in a position where they had to choose. Do we trust the man in the boat with us, or do we trust on our own experience on the sea? Do we trust our own hearts? You know, trust our own abilities? Do we trust what we can do? But we have to turn our trust towards Jesus and trust and know that he is going to take care of us in the midst of whatever is going on. So celebrate the gifts that God's given you and choose to have what God's given you and not what others have given you. Because we see something happen in the garden in Genesis. We see this. The Lord called out, this is Genesis 3:9. Then the Lord called out to man, "Where are you?" He replied, "I heard you walking in the garden," Adam replied. "So I hid. I was afraid because I was naked." So fear started in the beginning. The enemy has chosen to use fear to get you to stop believing in what God has for you. Because he learned early on what worked, the enemy did. And he's been doing it ever since. Partnering with the spirit of love is the way to displace fear. John writes this in John 4:18. "There is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear." Since we know that this is true, if perfect love casts out fear, then what casts out love? Fear. If love casts out fear, then fear will cast out love. So it's hard to love when we're constantly walking in fear. And so we can't coexist. It's either fear or love. And we have the power to overcome the fear that the enemy takes against us. Yes. So, here's a cool quote. You ready for this? You're going to like this one. "Fear is the path to the dark side. Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. hate leads to suffering. Yoda. The great wise Yoda. That's awesome, dude. Yeah, throw in a Yoda quote. I just spent way too much time on this stuff. I just have way too much time to plan. That's the problem. So in the world that we live in, this world that we live in, most things that are broken are useless. When you have a broken CD player, you throw it out. When you have a broken TV, you get rid of it. When you have a broken iPhone, you call up Renat. Or you get rid of it, if you know who Renat is. But in the kingdom, God values broken people. God uses broken people. God puts high value on brokenness. And that's pretty cool because it's the complete opposite of what the world says. The world says, if you're broken, you're no good. And God says, if you're broken, I'm going to use you. And I got something for you. Let's start here. Powerless people. This is out of Danny Silk's book. You got to get a hold of it if you can. It's called Keep Your Love On by Danny Silk. He talks about being a powerful person and being a powerless person. And here's what a powerless person oftentimes will react. The defining driving force of a powerless person is anxiety. Life is scary when you are powerless. When you live in a world where you believe most things and most people are more powerful than you. It's scary to feel like your life is out of control. That's not a good place to be. That's a powerless person. And a powerful person, he says this, powerful people do not try to control other people. They know it doesn't work and that it's not their job. Their job is to control themselves. That's good. Because being powerless, you have anxiety and you have fears and you're trying to control your environment, control your situation. But to be a powerful person, you know, I can control myself. I can't control what goes on in my environment and around me, but I can control myself. I can have peace. I can have power. I can have love. And I can have a sound mind and not have fear, anxiety, stress, and doubts about who I am and about what I'm supposed to be doing. And it's good. It can impact you. When you wake up in the morning and you choose, today I'm going to choose to put on love. Today I'm going to choose to put on peace. Amen? So, let's see. I'm going to tell a story about Ray. Can I tell a story about you, Ray? I didn't ask you permission. You knew it. Oh, you knew it because you're the one that made fun of me a while ago. So my truck breaks down, right, at work, and I got to get it home, and this is the second time it's happened. The first time I had to get it towed, and it was, like, expensive, and I didn't want to do that again. So this time Ray's like, oh, I'll tell you home. Let's get a rope. And I'm like, okay, yeah. So I'm, like, a little nervous, you know, and so we did. We got a rope, and I borrowed one from a neighbor, and we got it all out there. And we're standing in the parking lot. We're hooking the thing up, and I'm, like, I'm just shaky and all nervous and stuff. And he's like, dude, why are you so afraid? And I was afraid because Ray was going to tow me home. No, literally, I was afraid because I was getting towed home by Ray. But the cool thing is, you know, because it was nervous. You know, if you've ever been towed in a vehicle, you have, you know, no power steering, no brakes, and we're going across town all the way into Kelso up the hills and stuff. So I was nervous, you know. I was like, yeah, I don't want nothing bad to happen. And, you know, I'm that guy who thinks about that kind of stuff. I'm like, I don't think about the best thing that can happen. I'm like the worst case scenario guy. You know, it's like I start at the bottom and work my way up, and that way it's like totally this could happen. This is so bad. You know, that's how my brain is, and I'm like, but it can be good just as long as it's not tormenting me. Anyways, so we got home safely. Nothing happened. I was good. It was cool. And you know what? I trust Ray now because he got me home safe, and it's cool because it, like, all of a sudden. Because I pressed past that fear of, like, oh, something bad could happen, and I didn't know Ray that well, he towed me home, and he got me home safe, and now I have a greater trust in Ray. And, like, if he ever wanted to do it again, I'd say, yeah, let's do it, dude. What? I'm like, come on, man. You got me home safe. I bet my wife appreciates that. She got me home safe. And saved us some money. And so we owe you some cookies. Some brownies. Anyway, so that's cool. That's cool. And that, so that's what I'm saying. That's a situation like that, where a one-on-one situation in our own personal relationships with people, where when we allow to be in the uncomfortable, when we allow people to do things that we are not so sure about, it's amazing what can happen when we go, oh man, that worked out better than I thought. But our fear sometimes comes and goes, nah, I don't think I can do that because this could happen or that could happen, and I just would rather not. You know, and so we got to be able to be stretched and grow a little bit in that area. So that's cool. So thank you, Ray, for teaching me a lesson. He didn't know I was going to say that. I'm sorry. We're going to post that on the internet. So sometimes being in a survival mode can be a very dangerous place, because when we're in survival mode, we're just trying to like figure out how to like save ourselves. You know, they say when a lifeguard goes out to save somebody, that oftentimes they have to keep their distance from them because the person that's drowning, they're in survival mode, and what they'll do is they'll pull the lifeguard down and drown the lifeguard. And so, because at that point when they're just trying to survive, I mean, they don't care about anything except for just about me. I just got to get out of this situation. And so sometimes survival mode can be a dangerous place because we can hurt other people. And so you don't want to be there. You want to trust in Jesus and trust that he is going to be the one that saves us. And I'm going to tell that story. The very first thing that we see in the story is Jesus says, if I could put it in red letters, it is on my notes and it is in my Bible. He says this, let us go over to the other side. There's a promise. He said, we're going to get there. Let's go to the other side. We don't have to doubt him. If he said, we're going to go to the other side, we're going to the other side. You know, the disciples tried to do it on their own, and they only got about halfway across the lake. But Jesus took them to the other side. They got there eventually. So you can trust that if he's going to take you into something, he's going to get you to the other side. He's just a promise that we can grab onto. Disciples probably didn't get it at the moment, but if they look back at that moment, they could probably say, he did say, let's go to the other side. We're going to go to the other side. We should have trusted that he was going to get us there. And then we see another situation later on that they're in a boat again, but this time Jesus is not in the boat with them, and they freak out again. The whole thing where Jesus walks on water and Peter, you know that story. And it's kind of interesting because they had another chance to prove themselves and they chickened out again. But when Jesus says it, we can believe it. And it's in the Word of God. This is believable. It's true. It's what we do. It's who we are. It's why we're here today, because what else would we do? What else would we do with our lives if we didn't serve Christ? What else would we do with our lives if we didn't love our neighbor? You know, this is what it's all about, brothers and sisters. It's about growing in our love with him and growing with our love with one another. I'm a nervous kind of a guy to begin with. I don't like to do things that are uncomfortable, but I will. I do them because I love to see the outcome. And my 7-year-old Ethan, he's in class back there. We were at Sun River last summer. And we're getting ready to go to Sun River, and they have a water park there. And he's just now tall enough this year he was to go on the slides. And he'd been waiting and waiting to go on the slides, the water slides. And so we got on the internet, we're looking at pictures and stuff, and we're like checking it out, you know, and he's all excited about it. So he's anticipating this water slide that's going to be like super cool, you know. But he's nervous, he's scared, but he's like excited about it. We get there, you know, and he doesn't realize how big this thing is. You know, it's like, holy smokes, you know, a lot different in the picture, you know. So we get there, and he slowly walks up there, you know. He's a little nervous. He's like, I'm going to go. No, I'm not going to go. I'm going to go. I'm not going to go. I'm not going to go. And so he finally gets up there, and he gets up, waits in line, gets up there, and he goes for it. And he loved it. He just absolutely loved it. He was so nervous and so scared. But once he did it, man, he was like, I'm hooked. And then he was like, I want to go again. I want to go again. I want to go again. So we had to go. And so that's cool because it's like us, like it's just a child, you know, it's just like, she's like pushing past that little tiny just fear, you know, and it's being able to just go alongside them and just say, good job, man. I'm so proud of you for pushing past that fear, you know, for pushing past that anxiety and that stress and being able to try something new. That's so exciting. And that's how our relationship with God is. And when we're walking with him, you know, we can be a little nervous, but we try things that are a little uncomfortable. We don't understand. And it's amazing what we see, the outcome. Yeah. I'm in. You're in. So the Apostle Paul, he was in a situation later on. We see he was in a boat. We know that in Acts 27, he was in a boat and he was headed towards Rome. He was a prisoner. He was locked up in chains. And he was going to stand before Caesar. And everybody on the ship was freaking out. And they're like, we're going to drown. Let's throw everything off the ship. And they're like, we're going to sink. And he stands up and he's like, hold it. To the Romans. And he's like, don't worry. He's like, I had a dream. And in my dream, an angel came and he said, don't be afraid, Paul, for you will surely stand trial before Caesar. What's more, God is in the goodness, has granted safety to everyone sailing with you. So take courage, for I believe God. It will be as he said. So Paul got to be in a boat. But Paul knew that he could trust in Jesus and trust in God, that God was going to get him to where he had planned on taking him. Paul knew, I have to stand before Caesar and it's going to happen. And so when he got on that ship, he knew he was going to get to the other side. And so he was able to stand up to the other people and say, chill out, we're going to get there because God told me. God told me we're going to get there and I have to stand before Caesar and it's going to happen because God's not a liar. What God says is true. And so it's pretty cool that we got to see Paul do this, and Paul had a different outcome, a different way he handled the situation. So, looks like the kids are out, so I can wrap this thing up. When we're going through storms in life and fear starts to arise, remember we can ask God, what is it that I can get out of this storm, instead of asking God to get me out of this storm? Because oftentimes we ask him to get us out of it, and instead of asking that question, let's just ask him, what can I get out of this? What can you teach me in the midst of this? What can I learn from this? How can I grow and be stretched from this? And that's important to look at the situation that way. Romans 8 says, yet what we suffer now is nothing compared to the glory he will reveal to us later. And one more quote. This is from Rick Warren. Fear is a self-imposed prison that will keep you from becoming what God intends you to be. You must move against it with the weapons of faith and love. So we have a choice to choose faith or love, faith or fear. And I choose to have power, love, and a sound mind this morning. And I hope that you guys will choose the same thing, that when you get in a scary situation, that you don't have to choose fear, you can choose love. And that God will get you through whatever it is that you're struggling with. So bless you guys and pray over your request. Lord, I ask that whatever we're going through in our own personal lives, God, I pray that you give us the strength to fight this battle that's before us, God. Whether it be finances, whether it be sickness, whether it be the fear of being alone, the fear of people, whatever it be, God, I just pray that you would open up that blessing right now, that you would pour your supernatural strength and power over us in this room, God, so that tomorrow morning we would wake up and we would feel empowered to do what you called us to do, and not walk into fear, but walk in love, God. We just thank you, Lord, in Jesus' name.